everybody who had enough nerve to ask me to speak tonight. That was brave of all of you. I am Janice. I'm an alcoholic. I really do appreciate the chance to be asked to tell this story. I think I need to give you a disclaimer. I am flying solo. I do not have a note on me. I don't have an outline. I don't have a 3x5 index card. I don't have anything. So if I wander a bit, let's see, keep me in line. Jeremy, wave your hand so that get back to the subject or something. And also, somebody be my timer just in case I get carried away. Because, you know, I was a nurse practitioner in my work life, and I used to say that no one ever got bored talking about themselves. And I think that's true for me, too, so watch me. I was born on February 14th in 1952, so I'm 72 years old now. I was born to Mildred and Carlisle Brizendine. We're from the Southwest Virginia mountains. My parents got married when they were like 16 and 17. Their parents had to sign for them. I always assumed that was because they couldn't have sex otherwise. I don't know if that was true or not, but that's what I thought. Oh, thank you.
So you got to lead them.
All right, okay, great. Thanks, Jake. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm sure that I was a delightful surprise on Valentine's Day. And I was the firstborn and the only girl. So I was treated kind of special from the beginning. But, you know, I actually think, looking back, I was probably born restless, irritable, and discontent. It seems like I never had a place with everybody else. From the time I can remember, I always felt different. I always felt like I was never as good as others. And there's some things that happened to me as a child that we don't need to go in here that would actually affect your self-esteem pretty hard. So, you know, it took me years to work through that. But anyway, so I was fine. I was not an alcoholic, but it is probably noteworthy that the first drink I took, I drank to blank out. And also noteworthy is I didn't drink to black out for fun. I drank to black out because I was in trouble, and that was my solution to the trouble I was in. It's got kind of some gory details, which you might find interesting. I was 17, and I had a boyfriend who was older than I am in the Navy. My parents didn't like him. I don't know, can't remember the exact situation, but they kicked my ass out of the house at 17. I thought, what am I gonna do? I had just met this really nice Marine just back from Vietnam. It was great. So I'm at boyfriend's house with a bottle of vodka, and I call boyfriend, and then I call the Marine at the same time. And it was just a question of who got there first is who I was going to go with, the truth of the being, and the Marine got there first. So he carried me literally up the stairs to my parents' house and dropped me in the bed. And he told me later that he said to my parents, I don't love her now, but I think I will in the future. And 6 months later, we were married. And that marriage lasted 38 years. And that was remarkable in that he could stand me that long, honestly. I was not a good wife. I wasn't even that nice of a person, really, if you want to know the truth. So I got married at 18. I knew immediately I didn't want to be poor. I was poor from the word go, and I'd already been fired from two or three jobs, and that was just waitressing. I couldn't hold on to a job myself. But I knew I didn't want to stay at Dunkin' Donuts forever, so I started going back to school. I got married in June, started taking classes in September, and 7 years later got a two-year degree. In the time being, not through my own fault. I mean, I had a child, and the husband, the nice Marine who married me, at 26 got cancer, and it was a rough period. It was very rough. So I'm going to school, got a 3.5-year-old and a husband who's sick, and had metastatic disease we didn't think would make it. But even through all that, I didn't drink. You know, that one time of drinking to blackout is a solution. I was too busy and too poor. I didn't have enough money to drink. We didn't even keep alcohol in the house. He wasn't much of a drinker, an occasional beer. It wasn't until considerably later that I really found alcohol. My family is a family of drinkers. So beach week at the Outer Banks usually included at least two cases of half gallons for the three families that were there, which should tell you we were pretty hitting it pretty heavy. And even that really wasn't too bad until in 2008, my husband, who was 60 years old, came home and said, "I'm leaving, we're done." And he danced off with a woman who was the same age as my daughter, 21 years younger. Now that's when I started drinking. I mean, I can't look back and justify it, but that was the solution to that problem again. And the biggest problem in the world, I couldn't get myself out. You know, I couldn't. So I drank, and I didn't drink convivially. I didn't drink in bars, I didn't drink socially. I just drank. I drank at home. So, you know, the best thing to do when you're an alcoholic drinking like a fish is to surround yourself by people who drink more than you do. And nobody then will notice you're drinking. And so, overachiever that I am, now I'm a nurse practitioner, I've been to grad school, I make good money, I work for the government. I moved in a handyman who never got out of grade school. He left school in the sixth grade and never worked when he was with me. And I kept him body and soul for 5 years because that's all I deserved. After losing that wonderful husband, who I treated like shit, by the way, that's really all I felt like I deserved. And so for 5 years, I had a drinking partner who then drank more than I did. It was like perfect. But unfortunately, eventually even that got old. And you know, the problem is when you're drinking at that level, it's hard to find people who actually drink more than you do. You know, so you have to really look around for that. And because we drank mostly at home, you know, it's kind of hard to find somebody else to drink with. But you know, my parents stepped up. My dad wasn't an alcoholic, but I think my mom probably was. I would come home from work, and before I even got to my house, I'd call mom and she'd say, "Oh, come on back and have a drink." And it would be like three drinks later before I got home to join the alcoholic in my house and drink some more. I know, what was I thinking? But anyway, so finally, I started going to Al-Anon because he was the problem, I was not. He had the alcohol problem, I did not. I wouldn't be a drunk, I wouldn't be drinking if it wasn't for him. You're right. Yeah, well, you know, at the end when Al-Anon helped me shore up my self-esteem a little bit, I did went to the magistrate, got a peace bond, wrote a letter of eviction, and got rid of him. And that was great. At that point, I weighed 250 some pounds, and I'm not a tall person. So all I could think of is, okay, got rid of the loser. I know, I had bariatric surgery. So I had bariatric surgery, and that was great, because once I lost 100 pounds, the next part of my life that helped me drink even more is I joined Plenty of Fish. Anybody out there know what that is? The dating site? That is one wicked, weird thing to do. But I tell you what, I went through some men quickly. I couldn't find someone who would drink like I did, though, to be perfectly frank, and like my old alcoholic who moved out. So I stayed in Al-Anon, and ironically, as my drinking escalated, my duties in Al-Anon also escalated. I became GR for the group. Go figure. And was on the call list, you know, for emergencies. And people would actually call me with, you know, relationship emergencies. And I'm drunk on my ass. Now, the beauty of that is if you don't open your mouth, they don't know. And they get to talk. So I distinctly remember the day I went into Al-Anon and said, "I'm in the wrong room." They were one room and I was the next room over. And I said, "I'm in the wrong room." And a guy named Ross was the last guy I had talked to drunk on my ass at 10:30 at night. He said, "Wrong room." He said, "You seem fine to me." I said, "Well, that's because you weren't listening." 16. I could hardly get the words out. If Ross hadn't been so upset, he'd have noticed that I was drunk. So that's how I was and how I got to the level of alcohol that I used. So Plenty of Fish eventually brought me around to, I can tell you some stories about Plenty of Fish and Dayton. Now get me after the meeting, I'll tell you all about that. Because they need to be told. No, they do, trust me. No men, just the ladies. I will tell you though about Plenty of Fish is you never meet somebody directly. Always get there before they do, hide in a corner, and make sure that you like the looks of them before. Because if you don't, you can go out the back door before they notice. And anyway, I got pretty skilled at that. I did, at the very end, though, God sent me to a man who I am still with today, who was a retired Navy officer. My parents were thrilled. I mean, I'm 60-some years old, and they think I finally settled down. Little did they know. And, you know, I wasn't with Bob. I mean, I met Bob mid-July. And by the way, in my phone, it's still, I had so many men in my phone, I had to keep separate somehow, because I was calling by the wrong names when they called. So, but anyway, next to Bob, it says, cute and lives close by. And it's still on my phone. He doesn't know that. Don't tell him. So I met Bob, and we were together maybe, so my dad died August 7th. Unfortunately, Daddy never got to see me sober. And before Daddy died, he said to me, I think your mother has a problem with alcohol. I'm like, no shit. Anyway, he died August 7th, and on August 21st, now I'd known Bob about 6 weeks, he set me down on a Sunday night. I had a glass of wine in my hand. He set me down and said, I think you have a problem with alcohol. And you know, my first thought was, uh-oh, somebody noticed. I didn't mean for him to notice. I thought I was pretty good at hiding it. To the exterior world, anyway. People who, within my family, probably knew I was drinking too much, but they did too, so it didn't sound to matter too much to them. But it mattered a lot to Bob, and that was a Sunday night, about 6 o'clock. I was petrified, because I knew I couldn't quit. I was addicted to alcohol. I was an alcoholic. I did not want to say those magic words, but it was true. So, on Tuesday night, I made my way over to my first home group, over at Aldersgate Church, and there are people here who was there the night I picked up my white chip. I think they'd probably agree that for the first month of meetings, it was Tuesdays and Thursdays, I pretty much sat and cried nonstop. And I was petrified. I knew I needed a sponsor, and I didn't want to bother anybody. I didn't want to put them out. I didn't want to be a burden. I certainly didn't want to work the steps. From what I could see, it looked like a horrible idea. And I was really a little skeptical because I really wasn't sure I believed the bill of goods you guys were selling me. I wasn't sure I wanted to go there at all. Week three, Vernon Fish and his lovely wife were sitting, like, I was the third one in that row. And I said to Sheila, I said, I'm not even sure I'm an alcoholic. And Vernon said, it's been my experience, if you have to ask that question, you probably are. And the funny, I'll never forget the first night I walked in. So Richard, who probably a lot of you know, old biker dude, Vernon, old biker dude, sitting side by side, and I went, holy shit, am I in the right place? I was afraid to raise my hand, afraid what was going to happen. But it, as it turned out, the elder wisdom of all three of them was the things that fascinated me into the program initially. Now, I didn't want to be there. I was sent there by somebody else, and so by all accounts, I should have failed in the program, because you're supposed to want it, and you're supposed to show up when you're done. And I didn't feel like I was done, and I didn't want to be there. All I wanted to do was get people off my ass and go back to drinking. But, and the but part was, I looked at everybody in that room who were, they were happy, there was serenity, there was fellowship. I had never had a friend in my life. If you'd asked me to name my best friend at that point, I didn't have anybody to name. I really didn't. So, like, wow, I really want what they've got. I mean, mean, what if God is so special? And I guess if I have to give up drinking to get it, I can do that, because now I'm in my second month, maybe. And you can ask Sheila, I drug my feet hard about starting this step, hard. And the fourth step, I put off with it as long as I could. Now, all that time when I'm not really doing a good job working the steps, I'm wondering why it's not happening for me. Well, imagine I wasn't doing the program. I was just attending meetings, and that's not the program. The program, to me, is getting to know who you are, to find those character defects, try to root them out, and deal with them, and be a better person at the end. And that took a really long time. So, Sheila said, act as if. Just keep coming back and act as if. And that's what I did. I kept coming back, and I acted like I believed you. I acted like I thought the program would work. I acted like I was a decent human being who didn't lie, cheat, and manipulate people left, right, and center. I'm going to step back just a minute and just tell you that as a person, I mean, I had some redeemable qualities. I mean, I had to. I got as far in life as I did. But I treated God like he was my employee. When I wanted something, I asked God to do it for me, and I expected it of him, because I'm me, and because I'm so special, God should do it for me. And I always said that, you know, I put God in charge of gravity, and I had everything else. And I was very fond of many years of saying, there's nothing in this world I can't do if I put my mind to it. If I work hard enough, I can do anything. Well, anything except save my marriage for 38 years. And anything except stop drinking. So I found out that I was wrong. And the sooner I found out I was wrong, the better off I was. Humility, which I defined as getting to know who you are and doing something about it, did not come easy. I was used to being successful in life. I always had everything I wanted. Courtesy of either my hard work or someone else's. I wasn't very good AA for a long time. I didn't lie, but I certainly hid plenty of things from my sponsor. I laugh, and I know she'll remember, but I laugh because when I call her, I pick the phone, she'd say, okay, who didn't do what you wanted them to do today? And that's the response I got every phone call. Phone grabber, shaker, you know. But the truth of it was, is that's where I was there. And she, the other thing I remember is Sheila said, when we started working the steps, she said, now remember, when you're making this list of people, right, you're not making a list of people who have offended you or people who haven't treated you well. You're making a list of people who you haven't treated very well. You know. And she was right. That's what it was. So I kind of skimmed through the program the first time, not doing as good a job as I nearly should have. And the point where I changed into better AA was the day that she said, what did you do this morning? And I said, oh, I got up and I got a cup of coffee and I turned on my pad and I read the news. And made a grocery list, and then I finally wandered into my devotions, you know. And she said, what else have you done for your sobriety today? And I hadn't done shit. I had nothing. There was no part of me at that point that was actively involved in protecting my sobriety or even working towards it. I was still a dry drunk at that point. And that was a big turning point. When I did my next inventory, it was a whole lot more honest. It was a whole lot more expensive because I had stolen from people large amounts of money in the past. I guess I left out one thing. So after my husband left, he left in February, the house burnt down in October on Halloween. And by By that time, I already moved in a new candidate for my life, only this one was a doctor, so I had upgraded from the handyman. I know. But when the house burned down, he had stuff in my house. And when the insurance money was paid out, I just kept his. So when I did that second inventory, I had to pay back a lot of money, painful though that was. But that, when I started finally truly doing the amends I should have been doing from the beginning, is when the miracle happened. The shame and the guilt and the psychological suffering that I went through melted away. Literally melted away as I knocked off those people off my list one by one. There were some people I couldn't make amends to, and you know, I went back to high school looking for somebody who I had taken $300 from in 1969, and he was probably dead or something, but I couldn't find him. Well, I took the same amount of money and donated it to a charity because it wasn't my money to begin with. I shouldn't have had it. I should have paid interest on it, truthfully. So, I couldn't go back to my first hospital I worked where I stole drugs. That would have been a real downer, actually, because they'd have taken my license, but I couldn't do anything about that, so I did some volunteer work in another area, you know, for recovery purposes. So, I don't know. I haven't talked really a long time, but so, you know where I'm at today. You know, an active member of the group. I practice for progress and not perfection. Most of the time, most days, I do my devotions, and I'll tell you what, God and I are closer than we have ever been. He is no longer my delivery man. He is no longer my grocery man. He is no longer Santa Claus to me. Everything now has finally come around to your will, not mine. And I could not get there until I had gotten rid of all the dirty, crummy, awful things that I had done and hidden all those years. You can imagine that, you know, the big amend was to my ex-husband, who I've been feeling really too warm about since he had left. But, yeah, but I did. At that point, I was able to say to him, I was a bad wife. You know, I'm sorry you're gone. But I'm a different person now. What can I do to make it right? And I took him first because I knew what he was going to say. He was going to say, keep doing what you're doing. I still love you. Keep at it. Let me know how you're doing. You know. So the person who I never thought I'd be a friend with again has turned out to be a pretty good friend. I see him all the time. We do share a daughter. The daughter is not currently speaking to me. She is an only child. I don't feel too badly about that either because, that's a sidebar story, but the bottom line is that she wanted me to do something that I thought was not immoral, but almost unethical. She wanted me to basically cut a family member out because she was mad at them. And if I continued to speak to that family member, who happened to be my brother and her uncle, and she wanted nothing to do with me. And that was 18 months ago. And you know, I tried to explain to her then, I can't have that kind of resentment. I can't do people like that. Not unless you want me to drink again. You know, because if I go back to that person, the solution will return to being alcohol. And you know, I don't know why I thought that the broken brain I had would be able to solve the problem of the broken brain. I mean, a broken tool can't fix a broken tool. So my biggest drawback in the program was intellect. I'm sure I'm not the first person who said that. Well, Bill W. himself said, he thought he was smarter than the program and he could do this. Intellect does get in my way. That's one I have to still watch because it's not about me anymore. It's not meant to be about me, and I don't want it to be about me. Making everything about me was actually kind of a heavy burden when it comes right down to it. You know, I'd much rather it be about somebody else now. I seek opportunities every day. Not only am I grateful, and I pray religiously. I do not miss a prayer. But I make it a point to find ways to make lives, people's lives better. And I've said it before, even if it's something like last night, I was 10 o'clock, food line was getting ready to close, and I was taking my basket back, and there was two more baskets way out in the field, and I brought the other two baskets back with me too. And a little kid, you know, 18-year-old high school kid working late, was so happy that I was helping him get his baskets back. Well, it took me a few seconds, but it made him happy, you know. I'm a Goodwill shopper. I shop Goodwill every week of my life. And every week of my life, I see the same people, and I bring them candy. They've come, just like you guys, I'm the cake lady. For them, I'm the candy lady. They see me come through the door, they might as well put their hand out, because they know they're going to get a handful of candy. Their job is hard enough. They don't need me effing it up worse. They need somebody to be nice to them. So, believe me, this Pollyanna attitude was not present before. If I did something before for someone, I've heard a lot of people say they did it because they were expecting something in return. The thing I expected in return was for somebody to say, wow, what a nice person you are. Aren't you sweet? Aren't you great? Now, except for tonight when I told you about a couple of these things, I don't go around telling people what I do. I mean, that undoes the whole purpose, you know. So I think that's probably helped me get more humble over time. I did find out that either I was going to have to get humble or I would be made humble.
Yep.
And that's the truth. So I chose to get humble, although God knows it took a while. So in August, I will have been sober 6 years. I have the same sobriety date as my aunt, who has 36 years this year in the program. She's had a couple of devastating strokes in the last 2 years, and she says all the time she couldn't have gotten through this without the program. Her home group and friends bring in meetings to her 3 nights a week. They have a regular, scheduled, structured meeting, just like we meet in this hall. And it's 3 different groups of people, then they don't come to each other's meetings. It's really funny, you know. So I can see it, and I don't know how she's done it. She's been left paralyzed and lives alone. You'll be seeing her later this summer. She's gonna come stay the summer with me, and I'll be dragging her around the meetings too. So, but if it wasn't for her, and effective sponsorship, I smile every time I hear that, I wouldn't be here telling this story tonight. So thank you for letting me tell my story. Again, no one's ever bored when they talk about themselves. So. I hope I haven't dragged on too much. But see me after the meeting, all you women, I'll tell you all about POS. Thank you.